Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 379. And I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Super.
So, kind of a slower week this week, eh, boys?
It is. Hey, we're supposed to get some good weather this weekend, though.
That's right.
So there's that.
That's good.
There is that.
But we were sort of ruminating before we started up the podcast, and I was just thinking, guys, we say, you know, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot going on, when in actuality, there's probably a lot going on. Let's just say there's things going on that we're unaware of. So,
well, that could very well be.
That but could also, very well be.
Yeah, because but also, it's a time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of point of view. So I would imagine the folks, you know, at some startup or have lots of activity going on. So when we say there's not a lot going on, please keep in mind it's our perspective that I'm sure there's things happening in your life.
Yeah,
because you have a life. Maybe we don't. But
So let's jump into this first story. There's a story called "Brain Drain is Lowering Minnesota's Tech Workforce," and Tim, you put this in, right?
I did. It's the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, which just came out with this study. The what do they call it? 2016 Minnesota Business Benchmarks, and it's actually the story here. If you actually read the book, this benchmark study, it's actually pretty interesting. And there's a link in the piece here. And I guess the upshot is that we still have a ways to go in fostering the startup culture in the Twin Cities, or in Minnesota in general.
Well, and what was interesting is, you know, the Center for the American Experiment is here, which is a conservative think tank. And they came out, and there's been some op-eds in the paper and so forth about high net worth individuals leaving the state because of state income tax, and also the capital gains and how things are treated and so forth. And so as I read this, I was also thinking about that. Because I kind of rail against it, right? I mean, yeah, you can move to New Mexico, but boy, there certainly aren't the services that you would want. Yeah, there's a Target store and a Walmart and whatever, but and a Best Buy in Albuquerque, but you don't want to live there. The crime rate's high, and schools aren't that great, and so forth. But I was thinking I was thinking about startups and thinking about the fact that not only is it, you know, issues with taxes and so forth. But as my wife and I have been considering the third half of life and where we might want to live, we've been looking at health insurance costs because ours are going to go up so dramatically here. And it's a lot less expensive to insure a young family in California than it is here. And
why,
in Texas.
Why would that be? Is it just the way, is it subsidies from the state or?
It's a combination of that, but also the sheer volume of humans that are there.
Oh, okay. There's a bigger pool.
Pool, so the insurance companies can broaden their risk.
Yeah.
And you know, mitigate that by stretching it out. So, so that's why, you know, when I think about Austin, Texas, and the Bay Area as tech startup heaven, I mean, this is one of the things that plays into it. In fact, I'm going to ask Justin about this. When we have our guest on, Justin Grammons, about, you know, I mean, he's got a young family. What do they do with respect to healthcare? And is that an issue in startup world?
Oh, I imagine it is. The biggest issue that's come out of this report, though, is the tax burden on business.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see that as a problem because we have adjacent states, South Dakota comes to mind, and even Wisconsin.
And Fargo.
Where the tax burdens are dramatically different. And I could just see startups moving to, you know, Rapid City or Sioux Falls just because of that.
Okay. So, yeah, but talk about, you know, going to Rapid City or Sioux Falls. They're going to Rapid City or Sioux Falls, people.
Yeah, they're beautiful spots.
I love Rapid City.
They're just lovely. You do?
I do.
Yeah, Rapid City is a little.
Have you ever lived in Rapid City?
I would consider Sioux Falls because it's just over the border. It's not that
Sioux
far.
Sioux Falls is a very nice place, but it's not the Twin Cities. It's not a metropolitan area.
I agree.
And to say Wisconsin is in a financial mess right now.
Yeah.
They're they've done so much to lower the tax burden that they can't afford services anymore. And, you know, it's a trade-off. I think that, you know, healthcare is probably an issue, and I think taxes are probably an issue, but that's all part of the business of a startup. You have to work within those guidelines. Now, if you want to go somewhere else, then yes, you can go somewhere else, but you give up some things. You give up the enhanced services. You get up the you give up the network of people that have decided to stay and take on the enhanced, you know, the extra burden to
and get winter. The you give up winter. So
I always think of that sort of thing. It's like, if you can't afford to do business in the states that you're going to do, you've decided to be in, then you got to redo your business model. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I know liberal standpoint, liberal viewpoint, but I mean, that's the way it is for me. That is what this is all about. You know, you're paying extra taxes. You're paying, you're taking on a bigger burden, to pay into the community. So you get all of those benefits that community can offer.
Well, and what was amazing was when I went to my 10-year high school reunion, which is a while ago, out of 828 kids that graduated that year, almost 73% were still living in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And that, you know, a lot of that holds true even now. People just want to stay, which also makes it harder for people coming into the state to break into these cliques, but because we've all known each other since grade school. But
The proverbial Minnesotans will gladly give you directions to anywhere but their house. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. but it is an issue. I mean, it is.
And of course, it's an issue.
The taxes are probably the biggest thing. You know, yes, we have a lot of quality of life here and a lot of services and a lot of things going on and all of that, but that doesn't happen for free.
No,
it doesn't. And so we pay taxes for it.
But regarding the brain drain headline, that was always an issue in Iowa as well. When I was growing up and spent time in Iowa, there was always the talk of we're losing, you know, smart people to other states.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to be said for it's not necessarily the fact that the jobs aren't appealing or the jobs don't pay well or the fact of the matter is that when you're young and you just graduate from what? 16 years of school or however long it took you to get through college, there's a part of you that doesn't want to be in that same state, or you've gone to college in another state and you found that place appealing. Yeah. So you have to give a little bit of that to the fact that there's that wanderlust from somebody that's younger. A lot of times those people come back. I know a lot of people that moved away from the Twin Cities or moved away from, you know, when I was in Iowa, moved away from Des Moines or wherever, and they ended up coming back. Right. It's a challenge. It's always a challenge for a chamber of commerce. It's always a challenge for them. So,
yeah. Well, another big story this week was this one that Julio Ojeda Zapata put in the Pioneer Press about gov delivery poised for further growth in St. Paul. And I've been watching their model for a while and it looks really, really good. I mean,
yeah, I guess I missed the story that last month they were acquired by a equity company out of San Francisco.
I was at an event on Monday called Make It Minneapolis or Make It MSP, which is this initiative from the chamber to keep people or get more companies involved in technology or in businesses here in the Twin Cities. And I was I followed the tech track board and or part of that gathering. And I can't remember the CEO of Gov Delivery, but he was talking about his acquisition. This struck me as kind of odd. He said, you know, we just acquired for, I don't remember how much, it's like 123 million or something like that.
153.
Huh, yeah. And he makes this comment and people applaud and he goes, oh, I only got 2/3 of that. It was like, God, Jesus, dude.
Yeah.
You poor bastard.
Right.
Well, but yes, they have done very well, but they've been around quite a long time.
Yeah, they have. Well, this this company that acquired them, Actua, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this, but they were in different verticals like wealth management, compliance, and insurance, and they acquired Gov Delivery, so now they're in government communications. And I looked at that and I went, you know, there are a lot of private equity firms that are doing roll-ups. Like a friend of mine's a CEO of an education company, and they've rolled up a bunch of small education companies into one. So that makes sense. But then mm-hmm. I look at this Actua, this multi-vertical cloud company they call themselves, and think, wait a minute, now how does government communication necessarily fit in with compliance and the insurance space? I don't know. Kind of, maybe they just looked at them and went, oh my God, if we buy them, we can invest and really roll this platform out in ways these guys never could.
Well, I find it interesting. I found Julio's article interesting from the standpoint of this is a company that's been acquired or changed hands a couple of times, but have always remained loyal to St. Paul, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Because I think St. Paul is still very much underrated as an overall community and business center. And I mean, I think that's a really nice city.
Well, St. Paul is, one of the things that people have asked me, you know, what really is the difference between Minneapolis and St. Paul, people that don't live here? And I said, well, you know, and I'll go through the normal discussions of it, you know, and Minneapolis is more cosmopolitan. But I said, you know, in essence, Minneapolis knocked down everything that was interesting to look at, you know, historic architecture. And St. Paul has depth and texture. I mean, if you go down to Nina's Cafe, you know, the coffee shop over by W.A. Frost, or you have lunch at W.A. Frost. I mean, you know, there are just so many unique little spots in St. Paul, and the architecture is great, and the neighborhoods are great. I mean,
I would say it's a better place to live. If you're going to live in an urban area, it's quite a bit better than Minneapolis is from that perspective.
Yeah.
It's got more character.
Yeah.
You think so?
I do.
I think so. Yeah. It's got, Minneapolis has some great restaurants, but I think that just as far as density is concerned, this walkable, if you live downtown in St. Paul, I think that you can walk to a lot more different kinds and better restaurants than you can in Minneapolis. So from a livability standpoint, I think St. Paul has got it. Minneapolis beat. But from a business standpoint and, you know, just the diversity of different things. Minneapolis has a lot going for it.
But. Well, so we talked about all the startups leaving and opportunities because of taxes, but now here's another story by our good buddy Julio about the Twin Cities being one of the 8 best for tech startup workers.
Well, that was another interesting story. I don't necessarily know if it's comparatively, it's a good spot for tech startup workers, but it was probably more the focus of, it seemed to me the facts were more the focus of, it was just a better environment in general, as far as housing costs are lower and opportunities are higher, that, you know, the unemployment rate is lower. So yeah, I think it stands to reason that we would be a good spot for tech startups.
Yep. Yep.
And we got a video now, so, you know, that's all good.
Well, yeah. That is good.
And as someone who's lived in Pittsburgh, I can tell you that Minneapolis is much better than Pittsburgh.
How long did you live in Pittsburgh?
A year and a half.
What took but Carnegie Mellon's there.
I got my MBA there at the Cat School.
Oh, okay. Did not know that.
Yeah.
But they're going to be the AI hub with Carnegie Mellon, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean...
A lot of good universities in Pittsburgh, and you know, there's some things to recommend it, but I would not want to live there.
Yeah,
and they're one of the other tech hubs in this piece.
Yeah, right. Well, listen, let's bring on our guest.
Okay, and, let's do
this guy. His name's Justin Grammans, and Justin, we've all known Justin for really long. Phil, you
I don't know. We've had him on the show maybe I don't know half a dozen times.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And his LinkedIn profile does say that he lives at the intersection of emerging technology and companies building smart connected devices. And so I hope he's careful because, you know,
I love being, that. I was going to say
being in the intersection, living right in the intersection is not a good idea.
Do they have a playground there? Is that a good neighborhood?
It could be. It could be. But he and some guy, he's a founding partner of Lab 651 over in St. Paul. And it's an Internet of Things consultancy. And so it's, Yeah, and then he was a co-founder with me on IoT Fuse.
Yep.
And some other things. So
I think you want a gun in that neighborhood because it's kind of the Wild West in IoT these days.
Yes, it is.
Well,
a gun.
Yeah, it is. It is. But you know what? The thing is it's full employment for Russian hackers.
Oh, there you go.
So,
there
I mean,
you go.
What else do you need?
Blame it on Russia. When in doubt, blame it on Russia.
Well, let's talk to Justin.
We have no, we have absolutely no proof, but we're going to blame it on him anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm here. Hopefully you guys can hear me good.
Yeah. All right, Justin Grammons, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate being here on a Saturday morning, talking with you guys again. Always have fun.
Well, and we're going to talk about IoT Hack Day in just a minute, but first we have to say that we were reading your LinkedIn profile. It says that you live at the intersection of emerging technology and companies building smart connected devices. We're kind of worried about you living right in the intersection.
Yeah, did you build there or was that...
I chose to be there.
Okay,
gotcha. Oh, I think I chose to get hit up by whatever comes by down the road.
I love it.
Well,
so how are you, sir? You sound great.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling good. We're super excited.
Really great stuff. First and foremost, I know this is, we're going to talk about IoT Hack Day, but also wanted to mention that you are 651 Labs.
Lab 651.
Excuse me, Lab 651. You are... doing great things over there and big doings too. So you got a sort of a grand opening or a open house coming up and that sort of thing. So how are things going for you guys at the lab?
Yeah, good. It's been kind of a long process. Yes, we do have an open house this Thursday. So if people want to come by anytime between 4 and 8. It's free. There will be drinks and food and conversation. And you can kind of take a look around and see what we've built here.
But everybody register, though, so they know how to get a head count.
Right? Please do register. Yep, exactly. So we can plan with regards to food and stuff.
You guys set up shop over at that building on Vandalia that First and First has that property there with the big water tower and that sort of stuff. I remember looking at that place. There's now a brew pub there and all sorts of things. So how do you like the space?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's been, they've been kind of going through a transformation. I'm not sure when you looked at it, but, just about a year ago or so, Lake Monster Brewing moved in, which has been really, really popular. It's like every night whenever I leave, there's a food truck outside and there's a lot of really interesting people, hanging out, drinking. They're playing, beanbag toss and all that type of stuff out there. So it really has become a very interesting sort of magnet into the building. And the building itself is very arts oriented. The whole second floor, which is where we're on, lot of painting and sculpting. There's a company called Vandalia Glassworks, and they do glass blowing, classes fun. And stuff like that. So really kind of cool sort of vibe, the building. And we're at the far south end, so follow the signs. I will say, if you're planning on going, we're not the easiest place to find. We're kind of in this sort of piece of the building that kind of juts out. But we saw some really good opportunity to get involved in this space. And so, we actually took possession of the space in June, but then we took a good 3.5 months here to, kind of build it out. So we tore out the ceiling and repainted and recarpeted and actually tiled some of the areas because, it's the mesh of mechanical engineering, software engineering, and electrical engineering all together. And it's been really sort of fun for me as a software engineer. So I've been kind of, working in bits and bytes, for like 20 years, is what I tell people. And I've never really had a chance to experience what it's like to work with a mechanical engineer, right? So how does their world work? Where they're designing stuff in the physical world and they actually have to either use a 3D printer or get molds done. And then also in the electrical embedded world, see how they do. I mean, this is professional level stuff, right? So these guys are doing, serious embedded circuitry for, cellular connectivity, wireless antenna design, all that type of stuff. And so it's been really, really fun. And, we have a lab that we have where we have a small CNC machine and we have two 3D printers and we have a mill and a router. And so people get a chance to kind of see what it's like to actually build physical objects. And that's what Lab 651 is. It's the kind of the marriage of all of these things, of being able to build physical objects, being able to put smart components inside of them. And then my expertise is in building mobile applications and all that data residing in the cloud and doing sort of analytics and giving you real-time insights into what's going on. So that's that's kind of what we're doing at Lab 651, and we're talking with a bunch of different clients and really seeing some really interesting traction in this space.
So a question, when you tore out the ceiling, was that for drone airspace? Is that what you needed, or?
it was to get away from the 1950s look that they had in here. Gotcha. Before.
Just so everyone knows, that comes from the fact that Justin flies drones indoors.
I have been known
during
to.
Presentations.
And doesn't everybody do that though?
I have been known to do that. And we actually have a team that's going to be doing some interesting drone stuff at IoT Hack Day.
All right.
So we should have a drone flying there too.
Wonderful, wonderful segue. We'll be podcasting from IoT Hack Day next Saturday.
Yeah.
So tell us what is going on and where. Give us the 411, as it were.
Okay. I haven't rehearsed this too much, so it might come out a little bit garbled, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But no, it's next Saturday, October 22nd. It's at a company called Minitronics. All the details are at iothackday.mn. And it's 12 hours of, we probably have close to 20 teams now that are going to compete, which is, it's been growing every year. And teams come in and they compete from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And what can you build in 12 hours? And it's around this idea of these connected devices. So some sort of a physical component with some sort of embedded electronics in it. And how can you, I think first and foremost, it's a free event. So we have some amazing sponsors that have stepped up that have been able to provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner to these teams. Probably going to have close to 100 people there that will be competing. And it's really the idea of kind of build cool new devices to solve everyday problems. And some of them are a little bit more, fun and tongue-in-cheek and, may or may not be commercially viable. We've actually had two teams that have went on to form businesses around their ideas that have come out of this day. But the idea is to bring your team in. There will be an interesting or just a intro pitch at the beginning at 8 p.m. saying, this is my team. This is what we're going to try and build. And then the teams will hack. And like I say, there will be breakfast there. There will be lunch. There will be dinner. And then at 8 p.m., we'll open the doors up and anyone in the public can come and everybody will get a couple tickets that they can use to vote on their favorite team. And at 9 p.m., we'll announce the winner, and the winner will get a bunch of hardware and gift certificates and a bunch of other sort of stuff and, mad props. There will be three teams. We'll have a first, second, and a third like we did last year, and it'll just be a really, really fun event.
That's great.
This is the how many years now?
This is the third year. This is the third year for IoT Hack Day in the fall. So we started it in October of 2014. And then we experimented around with the Mother's Day Makeathon earlier this year, which actually worked really well. It was a really, really fun event. And we did that over at Leonardo's basement. And so we'll probably try and do two hack days a year and maybe do something in the spring and something in the fall.
Oh, that's outstanding. That is outstanding. And a couple of things have actually come out of IoT Hack Day. As I recall, wasn't Habit Aware, didn't that start at IoT Hack Day and move to actually, they're an actual startup, an actual company now and moving forward? It seems like I recall that, right?
Yep. Yep, yeah. Exactly. So, and that team was formed, around the event. They didn't know each other before. It was like, the founders or the people that had the problem had an idea and needed some help, and the team sort of gelled around this idea, and they built a very sort of rough prototype, I guess they would say, even to this day. So this was 2 years ago. This was in October 2014, and they're getting set to go to market now. By the end of this year, they're really, really close. But it was people that had day jobs, and they had this idea with regards to sensing habits that you don't want to do, and then giving you sort of a gentle vibrating buzz on your wrist. It's a wearable, and it fits very well in sort of the medical field, medical space. And so they've been able, over the past 2 years, they've been able to get over $500,000 in venture funding. They've been able to go to China and be a part of the Hackcelerator program there and get a chance to really sort of build their product up. And one of the guy who's one of the founders. He's actually working on the electrical embedded design work. His name's John Pritchard. Him and I are co-teaching a class on the Internet of Things at the University of St. Thomas.
Very cool.
Right now. And so, yeah, so I get kind of the inside scoop with what they're doing there. But it's really, really neat what they're doing. And they're going to have a product out here for sure by the end of the year. And then last year, a person came with wanting to do a internet-connected mouse trap. His name's Jay Myers, and he had a product called, or he now has a company called Termi, and they're going out and not really focusing on the consumer market, actually more focusing on the agriculture market. Mm-hmm. And he's seeing a lot of traction there in terms of what farmers will pay for, kind of a subscription service model. And he's able to, you know, provide a service where they don't need to worry about it. And he knows when these traps are set off and can deal with getting them reset and all that type of stuff. So something as simple as a mouse trap actually can still be connected to provide value these days.
I have a couple of things. It seems like the agriculture sector seems like it would be really ripe for the picking as far as IoT technology. It seems like there's opportunities everywhere in that space. Have they found that that is a good path for, have you found that's a good path for IoT?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other big one that I see is the idea of drones and doing mm-hmm. surveys and monitoring with regards to where are you watering, where are you fertilizing. And, right. you know, the story that I've heard is you know, they used to spend thousands and thousands of dollars doing these flyovers, and they'd only do them, you know, once every couple of years, they being the farmers, right? And now they can literally take a drone off the shelf, throw it up in the air, it zips around, takes a bunch of photos, and then analyzes it, and they get their results there within hours. And it costs a fraction of the cost. So that type of a solution has become very popular.
Are they finding, Justin, are they finding that farmers themselves are doing this, or is it more of a contract piece that they're paying some other company to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's more of a contract.
Yeah.
A piece. And there's another, the name of the company escapes me, but they're a autonomous vehicle company here in the Twin Cities that has like a fixed wing aircraft that can cover much, much larger areas. Cause that's the other problem with a lot of these drones right now is, you know, they'll run 5 to 10 minutes or so, and then they'll be done. Mm-hmm. And so commercial avionics companies now have started to move into this space, and they've been able to provide a lot better technology. And then, you know, yeah, they're the outside sort of contracting party. Working with farmers. Now, there is another example where they're actually having having sensors right in the soil. Mm-hmm. And I know a company here in town, NimbleLink, they've been providing a lot of wireless services around that to I forget the name of the company I don't think they've been going directly to the farmers, but what they do is they basically put sensors in the soil, and they can measure, you know, down so many feet with regards to you know, how dry the soil is, and mm-hmm. these things are sitting out in the field, and they're broadcasting. You know, they can be run by solar, they can be run over cellular networks, and these things can just be dropped and set up in the field with relative ease. And now they can start collecting data in real time with regards to moisture control.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, I got a question about. Can you just for a moment talk about the LED costume? A portion of IoT Hack Day, what that's all about?
Yeah, for sure.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, so this is something that's been going on for the past couple of years. We did it the first year in 2014, and we did it last year, and we're going to do it again this year. And, you know, I have to tip my hat to Dan McCreary. He's a guy that's been working in the community here around education and Arduino and hardware and getting kids involved in technology for many, many years. So this is really his sort of passion. And he came to me in 2014 when he found out about IoT Hack Day, and him and I have been together, you know, kind of running the Arduino MN group, and he's been to a lot of meetups and presents at a lot of stuff. But he's like, hey, I have this idea, you know, maybe as in conjunction with IoT Hack Day, a lot of maybe parents might want to participate, but maybe they want to bring their kids as well. And could we do a thing, since it's October, could we kind of do a sort of a costumes event? So this thing, and this event where kids could come in, and while IoT Hack Day is going on, they could be inspired and they could work on a project as well. And I was like, this is phenomenal. You know, it's great. And yeah. So Dan's been able to, you know, kind of source hardware. hardware. So, you know, the kids don't need to bring anything at all. There is a cost to this portion of it. It costs $20, but you get an Arduino at the end, you get LED lights, you get switches, you get all the stuff you need, and you can, and you take that at the end of the day. You know, your child takes that. So it's really a great deal. We're not making any money off this. I mean, this is exactly what the cost is for the whole thing. And so Dan set up a room in 2014, and you know, kids came in, and he showed them how to you know, use LED lights, and you know, affix them to various clothing, and then program them to do different things. You know, they're all multicolored, so you can have them light up pink, you can have them light up red, whatever you want. You can have them blink, you can have them go, you know, in a series, and it was really, really cool, and the kids really enjoyed it. And so we've been continuing to do that, and it's been growing. And this year we have 20 kids signed up, actually 21 kids signed up, and really the biggest limitation is actually volunteers. So we want to make sure that that we don't have, that there's not 21 kids and there's just one Dan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we've been you know, kind of limiting the number of people that can sign up, or number of kids that can sign up, to, you know, three children to one mentor. So we have seven mentors that have stepped up and been able to help out. And we're going to have, now we've outgrown the conference room that we had it in the first year. We're going to have it in a couple different rooms there. And the whole idea is to, you know, come in at nine. You can stay all the way to the end. If you're a part of IoT Hack Day and you wanted to bring your child, that's great. Unfortunately, right now we are sold out.
You're sold out. Yeah.
We are, yeah, unfortunately. But yeah, that's the whole point of that thing, is to kind of help kids get exposed to technology. And a lot of these other projects are maybe, you know, out of the realm of what their interest is, or really maybe what their technical abilities are. And so the LED sort of costume event kind of brings it down to something that they can grasp and that they can understand. And at the end of the day, just trying to get them to learn more about technology, and that it really is not that difficult to do, that they can take on something like building their own costume and make something.
Well, but also, I mean, you know, the supply here, you know, the Arduino Nano and a USB cable and a addressable LED strip and blah, blah, blah. I mean, the parts are like nothing. I mean, a mom and dad, if a kid came to, you know, if my son had come to me after being at this and said, "Hey, Dad, let's buy some more of these," it'd be like, "Yeah, whatever." You know, you go spend $30 or $40, and well, maybe a little more than that, but.
No, the whole cost of the whole ecosystem is coming down, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, is that anybody can participate in this. And really, my mind goes sort of worldwide too. Right. So you can start having people in other countries that maybe wouldn't be able to be accessible to this stuff. Now they can start building things.
Well,
it's just fascinating.
Well, just Googling IoT Hack Day, you'll see that the next biggest one is in India.
Wow. That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's, you know, there are, there's a lot of interest in this all around the world, as we all know. So, but this is great. And, yeah. And so it's still possible, though, for people who are listening to sign up for IoT Hack Day on Saturday, next week from Saturday on the 22nd.
Yes.
And yep. And if they just want to come and observe, they can do that, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. So people can come and observe anytime during the day. We welcome people to come in and walk around. Teams will be frantically busy building things. But you'll see some 3D printers there. You'll see people soldering stuff. You'll see just people having a good time. But yeah, I mean, if you're a part of the Internet of Things community, feel free to come by Minitronics anytime during the day. We do kind of have this sort of grand unveiling at 8 p.m. And there will be a link on iothackday.mn where people can click on that and then register on Eventbrite. That's kind of coming at the 8 p.m. And being able to, you know, make your vote count. You know, walk around, talk with the teams. These teams are more than happy. In fact, they're in all cases, they're generally excited to talk to you and tell you about their project and what they built. And so you'll get a really good chance to kind of have a good conversation with all the teams and be involved in casting your vote for the winning team.
That sounds great.
And you know, you can say you were there, you know, when the next Habit Aware.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right.
I knew them when.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Cool. Well, Justin, as always, it's great talking to you.
You always have
great things cooking, and really appreciate you taking the time, getting up early and joining us.
Thank you, guys. I always just have a good time talking with you guys, and I appreciate being on the podcast. It's always fun.
We'll be there next week.
Perfect.
Take care.
See you then.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
So that fun was stuff. Great.
Well, I'll tell you, it's, you know, the guy is, he's just a machine, a startup machine. I mean, because you were involved with him with a Mobile March right at the very start.
Yep.
You know, he's volunteered at Coder Dojo. He was one of the co-founders, you know, the three of Patrick Delaney and Justin and I founded IoT Fuse, and then he did Arduino MN. He's got this IoT Weekly News. He's a, he's on the faculty of St. Thomas and just like, hey, what about your kids? Hanging with your kids?
Well, you know, he does that. He does that too.
He does that too. Yeah.
It'll be interesting. What's always fun with Justin is what's next?
Because he's
really on the edge of it. He always does. You know, I'm always kind of curious, when is he going to stop and settle for one thing and just, and keep doing it.
Right.
But he does something, he's successful at it and moves on to something else. He's got a very inquisitive mind. So other stories that are happening around the tech world. Of course, big news this last week was that Samsung finally threw in the towel and took their flaming phone off the market.
Tim, aren't you glad you didn't buy a Samsung Note 7?
Yeah, I am actually. I'm kind of questioning from a brand perspective, are they going to be able to come up with a Galaxy Note 8?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Supposedly they've got one. Well, supposedly they got one in the hopper, and it's going to come out in February.
Huh. Okay.
A Note 8.
Are they going to call it a Galaxy 8?
Yeah, I guess.
Who knows?
I think it would be time to kill the brand myself. But
yeah, I think it's been tarnished or burned up.
Yeah.
Incinerated. The brand's been incinerated. Jeez.
Yeah, but what?
this is really good for Apple. I think they're going to sell a lot more of the big iPhones.
Well, that's why Apple stock's gone up.
Yeah.
And I actually ordered a iPhone 7 because I'm on that AT&T Next program, so you can get one once a year. And I went ahead and ordered it, and it was supposed to show up between November 4th and November 12th or something. And it arrived Wednesday, so I've been using it for a few days.
Mm-hmm. But what did you get? You got the Plus again?
The Plus, 256 gig.
Wow. And, I just picked up the 7 at 128, and I still don't know what I'm going to do with all that space.
Well, I didn't either, except the new camera. The new camera is good enough that I've been snapping like mad. Plus, I have a camera app that allows me to take rapid fire shots. And so, like, I got a bunch of shots of a coyote in our neighborhood. So I did, you know, taking rapid fire.
Does it have that sort of photo winder sound that goes with it to make you sound?
It does make a little clicking noise. Yeah.
Like you're a, you know, a big time photographer.
Yeah. Yeah. So Oculus, Oculus, the VR company, Tim, I didn't even know about this one, that they removed support for the Note 7.
Yeah, you definitely don't want one of these on your head when it catches on fire.
No,
you don't. Oculus is saying, it's a little bit too much liability for us. We're going to make it so that you can't use this phone with it, which is prudent.
Prudent, very prudent. They're waiting for the next the Samsung Enfuego 7 that'll come out. So
yeah, well, you know, and it's interesting because the I had somebody ask me yesterday, and this is, I want to just say this right out of the gate, that this is a total rumor, total innuendo, and all of that. So I just really want to have a big disclaimer up front, but saying that there's a lot of Internet of Things investment being done by Samsung in places other than smart things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think that would only be smart, I think.
Well, I would think too, and based on the initiatives, you know, smart things not going to do smart refrigerators.
No.
You know, they're not going to build that one, you know, stuff like that. It's a different space, especially industrial internet stuff. But this particular individual shall remain nameless, but sort of indicated or intimated or implied, I should say, that it was the death knell of smart things. I'm like, no. It's the fact that if you look at any analysis of the Internet of Things space, it covers literally everything. So there's so many little discrete verticals that, and Samsung's a big company. So
indeed they are.
So what else is going on in the world of tech?
Well, I found this one to be interesting. It's from Search Engine Land, and it's that Google has announced that they're going to split the mobile and the desktop indexes for SEO. And
really,
yeah. And so that the mobile will be the primary index. And so if you're doing SEO, you should do mobile SEO mostly, I guess, and desktop second, which is surprising. Eye-opening, yeah. I think, for those of us that dabble in SEO from time to time.
Right.
So, Tim, tell me the difference between mobile SEO and desktop SEO.
Well, it's the mobile appearance of the site. Sometimes these are completely different, but increasingly with responsive designs, it's really the same site. But it's how the content appears to mobile. It'd be interesting. This story doesn't really get into it, but there is a bit of mobile SEO that happens on the app side as well. Will this new index, reflect that or not is an open question.
Well, what was Google's mobile? There was a name for it. It was a strategy that all sites had to be under this umbrella. I can't remember. My name just blew out of my head.
Yeah, they have an accelerated.
It starts with an A. It's like mobile, AMP or something.
Yeah,
like Google AMP or
is it? Yeah, it's AMP.
It is AMP. Okay. And so it's the Accelerated Mobile Pages Project,
right?
And it was all about the fact that for example, the pop-ups that occur, which I abhor on mobile. All of a sudden your screen will go gray. And you can't even find the damn thing. You're scrolling up and down.
Most of them are very unoptimized for mobile, strangely enough, that have all these horrible pop-ups.
Right.
And it makes them unusable on a mobile phone.
Yep.
So, we really have to pay attention to all that.
Yeah. Well, they're watching the numbers, so they know what's coming and what's already here and where we need to be. And
well, most of the majority of searches are done mobile, whether it be a tablet or a phone. And that is where the action is right now from a search perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that search is going to morph from especially as it goes to mobile, from you type it into you make a voice search. And that sort of leads into our Mossberg column about Siri.
Oh boy!
And why does it seem so dumb? And he points out a lot of good points in his column here. That you ask Siri some specific bits of information, and it really can't answer back with good results. But you take the Google search app that's right on your iPhone, and you do the same thing, and it's quick and gives you back the detailed information that you've requested.
Well, the Google search app is in my my home directory. And so if I say, if I push this here and say, what time is it in Lucerne, Switzerland?
The time in Lucerne, Switzerland is 4:20 p.m.
Nice. Only does it tell you, but it reads it to you. And I'll say things like that to Siri and Siri gets it. But then if I ask a more sophisticated query, Siri will pull up a bunch of web pages and say, because it's is driven by Bing. And so when I look at the whole AI thing and I look at where a lot of this voice stuff is going, Google has such an unbelievable engine underneath it to drive that, oh my God.
Yeah. Apple really needs to do something here, because this is kind of where the puck is going. And they looks like they might be in third place behind, Google and Amazon pretty soon, which won't be a good place to be.
Well, I'm not worried about Amazon, but Google,
I think they should be worried about Amazon.
Yeah.
Not in the phone space, because obviously that's ship has sailed and they're not going to be in the phone space. But in the IoT with all these connected speakers and all that, it's gonna be a big thing, and people are gonna get addicted to just talking to their devices.
Yeah,
and the bottom line in this Mossberg column is that if you don't have the confidence in Siri, you just stop using it and you use alternatives.
Yeah,
and that's gonna be a bad thing for Apple
right
in the long run.
No, I agree. I agree. Well, I'm also going to try to find this as an article, but Majel Barrett, you know, who is Gene Roddenberry's wife and was the voice of the computer on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Her voice.
And also Nurse.
Nurse Chapel.
Chapel, yes.
Her voice was totally digitized, and it's going to be used in the new movie, the next Star Trek movie. And all I could think about was, oh my God, would I love to license that voice?
Wouldn't that be great?
To have her, wouldn't that be awesome? And I'm going to bet somebody's going to do that for their
They're going to do it. That's for sure. That's a great promotion for the movie.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
You'll be able to do it.
Very cool.
Indeed. Speaking of cool things, what do you have, Phil?
It's the cool thing of the week.
It is.
Okay. So I'll start, but I just want you to know I'm not usually the Kickstarter guy.
Tim, I know. We have scoured Kickstarter this week.
Yes. But this one, I was just kind of looking around, seeing what was new, what was happening. And I saw this and I thought, this is kind of, and I saw it and I thought, this is really cool. And then I said to my wife, I said, Lori, come look at this. And she goes, wow, that's really cool. This is called the Polygons. It is the flat 4-in-1 measuring spoon. It's very difficult to describe. You really have to see it, but basically it's a flat piece of what appears to be plastic. It's a special plastic with hinges that are made to be able to fold and unfold 100,000 times or something like that. But wherever you grab it and push two halves together, you'll get a different size.
It's very clever. Zone.
It's very, very clever. And this is the kind of thing that I just think is just the great thing about Kickstarter. You have these very clever things. And then the fact that they had a goal of $10,000 and they have 36 days left to go on their campaign and they're at $210,000 already in support. So it hasn't even been built and it's got to already be profitable.
$12 now.
Yep.
I think I'm going to get one of these. You know what this would be great for?
Camping?
For camping. Yeah.
Yep.
This is really good for that.
Oh, it would be.
Yep. Yeah. Although you can buy a full set of measuring spoons for $1 at the dollar store.
But this is cool.
Using this would just feel like you're in the future, you know?
You would just be so cool.
Yeah. That's right. Mr. Tim.
So Acano, which I don't know if we covered this. This may be something we covered years ago when they were first on Kickstarter. So Acano is it's kind of like a modern day Heathkit for electronics. And they have a new Kickstarter that's out now, which adds three different kits to their program. And think of it like a Heathkit or the Radio Shack kits that we used to use back in the day, you know, kind of married with Legos, and it has microprocessors built in. And the three kits that they have currently on Kickstarter are, there's a camera kit. There's a kit that does, what does it do? It does like a light show sort of thing. It has a speaker, portable speaker kit. So it's just sort of a really cool, like, project-y thing. If you have a kid, I think this would be a really great device for people to learn about programming and build cool stuff. So it's very the nice. Camera, speaker, and pixel kit from Kano. And they're very close to their goal of 500,000. They're at 482 with 12 days to go. So I believe that they will actually reach that goal, and you'll be able to get them. And they're a little pricey at $100 a pack. But if you have a kid, I think it's worth it.
So did you get one?
I did not.
Are you thinking about getting one?
I'm thinking about it, but I don't know which one I'd get, actually. I think I might get this the speaker kit, actually.
Okay.
That would be the one that I would go for.
Cool. Very nice.
Anywho.
Steve?
Well, this was my cool thing of the week for September 20th of 2014. But I have been using it since then, and it is so rock solid that I had to do it again because they're going to have a sale on starting Monday the 17th at Amazon. Price is unknown right now, but typically they knock $10 to $15 off. So right now they're charging $47.95 for the OB 200, which is a little box that you can have Google Voice. I actually have two Google Voice numbers. You can have up to four different voice over IP services through this little box. And then I have a $22 Motorola cordless phone hooked up to it. And that is my direct line for work.
I've been using an OB100 for going on 5 years now.
Well, so, they're no longer going to support it.
Well,
the 100, really? Yeah, the 100 and the, I think of the 150 or something, they just emailed everybody yesterday and said that they're
except him.
No longer, except him. They're no longer going to support it. Yeah. And you do really want this supported. You want the firmware updates because there's all kinds of port scanning that happens with VoIP ports, voice over IP.
Well, it looks like I'll need to watch this sale and buy a new one then.
You could do what most people have done, just stop using a landline.
But it's not a landline, it's a Google Voice line. So rather than have it ring my cell phone, for example, which I do have it ring, my direct line rings my cell phone, but I give out my Google Voice number because the spam catching for Google Voice is so much better than any other service.
They're not supporting Google Voice anymore, are they?
Yes, they are. Oh, God, yes. That's their number one selling proposition. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been using Google Voice for 2 years.
Well, no, I've been using it, and I know it's still active. But
No. On the OBI. On the OBI 200. On the OBI,
okay.
Yeah. Well, there are alternatives because Google Voice was rumored to go away, and they had plenty of alternatives that you could use.
That's true.
Yeah. For this device, but the Google Voice has the most features. It's the best one.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the way that we've been doing our home phone for almost 5 years now.
Well, and I actually had a buddy buy the OB202, which has two phone ports in it, and he wired it into his home phone network. You know, the wiring, and so all the regular phones ring when the Google Voice number rings. So pretty fun stuff. Anyway, so that was my cool thing.
All right, I'm upgrading.
Cool.
Since the 100 doesn't work anymore, apparently it's still working now, but I guess
it'll work, but there will be no more firmware updates. So
okay. Yeah. So if I'm really cheap, I just take the chance.
You do, if you want to expose your network to Internet of Things hackings. Anyway, so
but, I definitely want to do that.
So there's only one new upcoming event. I do want to mention that Converted 2016 is happening Tuesday and Wednesday, and a client is taking me, so I'll be there. So that'll be interesting to see. I'll recap that next week. But then IoT Hack Day next Saturday. But this new one, did we cover this last week? We made it by the Minnesota Cup.
I don't think we did, no.
No, we
did. It's going to be down. Yeah, so this is going to happen on Monday, November 7th, and it's a showcase event featuring 12 woman-led startups from a whole bunch of different industries, including tech, food, life sciences, and what they call impact ventures, which I'm not really sure what that means.
They're ventures that make an impact.
Make an impact.
Well, yeah. Get with it.
Thank you, Tim. So, I mean, to be able to go to this and see 12 different companies, startups, that'd be great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So, but, you know, there'll be all sorts of things going on next week, and I bet you we'll talk about them live from IoT Hack Day next Saturday on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care.
Swimming in the deep blue sea. I have all you good looking women. Vision of me. Vision of me. Vision of to me, vision of to me, vision of to me, vision of to me. No.
come on in, now join.